a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Monroe.
Here.
Otten.
Here.
Senator Otten, a quorum is present.
We have a quorum. So we will move on. The minutes. We have an approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Senator Monroe, and then Senator Jones as a second. And reminder to all that will be testifying today, if you will hand out, your handouts will be distributed by the pages. And a reminder that also all questions will be addressed through the chair. And with that being said, let's move on to our docket. SB 160, the exempt the products of certain plants and sods from sales and use taxes. We will have our proponents. Welcome, Senator Bogalka.
Thank you, Senator Otten and committee and everyone listening. I am Senator Tim Bogalka from District 4 in Clear Lake. And I have the pages passing out one hand. I just have one page handout this morning. I do own a greenhouse, nursery, and floral shop in Clear Lake. And those of you that are new, and I believe three of the five on the committee are new, probably haven't seen a bill like this before, but I assure you it's been around. It's been around for many years. It's gone through different looks. It's had several different prime sponsors. It's passed many different committees. It's passed both chambers multiple times. It's been vetoed at least twice. It's nearly overridden a veto twice. The main theme of this bill today, I believe, is fairness. What I'm asking you to do is to fairly and equally enforce the existing laws that we have. These are laws that have been on the books for years dealing with exemptions for ag production. Now, if you look at the bill, there are two sections. The two sections are identical. Section 1 10 goes into Chapter 1045. That's our sales tax chapter. Section 2 is 1046. That's our use tax chapter. The two sections are identical, and that is typical in the tax code. Because if an individual owes a tax, if they didn't pay sales tax when they bought it, they are liable to pay use tax when they fill out their sales tax forms or use tax, sales and use tax forms. In my case, that would be monthly. What I'm attempting to do here is to apply these exemptions equally on plants such as those that I raise that are ultimately sold at retail. I believe what we have now is a double taxation, because any fertilizer, pesticides I use in my greenhouse, I am required to pay sales tax on them when I purchase them. The product, of course, that they go into is taxed. My customer pays the tax on it when they buy it. And I challenge anyone in the room to find anywhere else in agriculture that that is true. If you look at your handout, this is actually a classification of ag land as agricultural. And I believe there may be a bill up to tweak some of this year dealing with the acreage. But if you look at point 2, it says its principal use is devoted to the raising and harvesting of crops of timber or fruit trees, rearing, feeding, and management of farm livestock, poultry, fish, or nursery stock, the production of bees and apiary products, or horticulture. Now, in researching this bill over the years, I've contacted the bee people. No, they don't pay a sales tax. I've contacted fish people that are in the business of raising or harvesting trees for forestry. They don't pay sales tax. Even the farm wineries, there was a farm winery bill a few years ago, they don't have to pay sales tax on these items. Only this one narrow group of businesses are still paying it. And why is that? No one knows exactly for sure. The Department of Revenue, of course, their job is to collect taxes, and as much as they can from whoever they can, we have a broad tax base. And a couple decades ago, someone decided, hey, I think we can go after these guys, and they've been going after us ever since. And they're free to do that until the legislature tells them no. The legislature has never given them approval to do this, but they have done it. Similarly, we have had bills the past few years dealing with straw. All of a sudden, they started taxing straw. And there was an uproar from the community, and there was a bill, and the bill passed, and no longer is straw taxable. Even chicken feed. We've had bills dealing with different kinds of fowl, feathered friends. I go down to the co-op, I can buy a bag of chicken feed. I don't have to pay sales tax on it because it's agricultural. If I buy a bottle of malathion to use in my greenhouse, they probably won't charge me tax on it because it's an ag product. If I tell them I'm a farmer, they won't charge me tax on it. But if I come and get audited by the Department of Revenue and they found out I used that malathion in my greenhouse or in my nursery crops, it is taxable. So you can see the inequity that's been going on for years. The other issue I'd like to bring up is the whole idea of the of economic development, fairness. When you consider that we have, I believe, three fairly good-sized wholesale greenhouses in South Dakota that raise greenhouse crops under glass, and they have to pay tax on these items, pesticides, fertilizer, fuel, heating fuel. All the neighboring states that I know of that they compete with, all these items are tax-exempt. For example, Hebert's Greenhouse in Sioux Falls, very large, the largest in South Dakota. They also have facilities in Minnesota. And they assured me that, no, all these things are tax exempt in Minnesota. But in South Dakota, they have to pay tax on all these items. This industry is not booming in South Dakota, as you probably know. Some of you may not even ever been in a greenhouse or know where they are that actually grow stuff. I've just in northeastern South Dakota in the past 20 to 25 years, I've been to 8 auction sales where guys have gone out of business. Greenhouses and nurseries just in northeastern South Dakota. We're at a disadvantage not only in the tax structure, but just the weather. Think of the extreme cold we've had, fluctuations in temperature, strong winds, all these things add to particularly the heating costs. And when you consider the businesses that are on the borders or that are attempting to wholesale their products to smaller retails, they're at a disadvantage. The big question, though, and the stickler in the past has been, what is this going to cost us? Can we afford to give these guys a tax break? Now, back in 2004, the LRC made me a fiscal note, and their fiscal note said the fiscal impact on the state of South Dakota in 1 year was $5,000. Now, granted, that was just the pesticides and fertilizer. That did not include the fuel. The fuel would, of course, make it bigger. But when you consider that the only ones that are really using fuel to heat their growing plants are those that have greenhouses and those that are open or producing things in the winter. If I have, if I'm growing trees outside or if I'm growing sod, that's a moot point. The Department of Revenue's estimates are, of course, much larger and I believe extremely exaggerated. Now, some people may claim I'm being self-serving here. Perhaps I am to a certain degree. I don't believe there's anybody else in the legislature, has been in the legislature for decades, that is in this business that really knows firsthand what we go through. It's a lot of hard work, and they don't have a lobbyist. They don't have a, you know, organized. There is a Nursery and Landscape Association, but you know that's made up of all sorts of diverse landscapers and contractors and florists and people that don't even actually grow plants. So when it comes to me, my personal business, I'm relatively small, maybe $100 a year is what this personally will benefit me. And when you consider all the time and gas, and even when I was not in the legislature, I was pushing bills like this, and we've had various fee bills. The Department of Agriculture, of course, inspects all these businesses. We pay annual fees, inspection fees, based on our size, in order to sell hardy nursery stock in South Dakota, you have to have a nursery inspection fee. I've been kind of a volunteer lobbyist. I think I probably spend more time on gas and motel rooms and my time than what I was actually benefit from it. But I want to look out for my friends in the industry. When we look at the state as a whole, I had the fortune of visiting with a gentleman from Hebert's Greenhouse. It's now called, I believe, Plant Beauty in Sioux Falls. They were bought out by a larger company, Natural Beauty. His actual numbers, which he emailed me, and he said, these are probably actually a little high, but he wanted to be honest about it and not make them small. But he says, and this is by far the largest greenhouse that will be affected by this in South Dakota. His actual numbers, expenditures, for 2014, he says, I even bumped this up a little because it's been colder. $300,000 for fuel, $100,000 for chemicals and fertilizer. That's $400,000. Now, the Department of Revenue 2 years ago claimed that statewide, the expenses for everyone put together was over $8 million. But we have the largest business is spending $400,000. And I would estimate that's approximately a third of, knowing how many businesses there are, that would be maybe a third. So anyway, getting back to this Natural Beauty in Sioux Falls, $400,000 in expenses for these items at 4% sales tax would be $16,000. So $16,000 benefit to them, $16,000 hit on the state budget. And I believe it would be accurate if we triple that statewide number. $50,000 is my honest, educated estimate of what this would be a hit on the budget. That's kind of like the crumbs that fall to the bottom line over an appropriations committee. Just look at the emails we got this winter. Guess what? The state has $20 million more this year than they thought they were going to have. They spent less, which is good. Sales tax collections were up, which is good. We have $20 million extra dollars to spend now. But yet we haggle over $50,000 for an industry that I believe has been slighted for decades. There's only, and the bill I believe is written tight. It's not going to benefit people that raise vegetables at home. It's only a commercial fruit and vegetable growers, sod growers, and there's only two or three of those in the whole state. Permanent greenhouses. If I am a grocery store and I set up a little temporary greenhouse in my parking lot for a couple of months and bring plants in, I'm not eligible for this tax break. This is only those who are in the production of plants. Of course, if I was a larger greenhouse and I had a couple satellites, of course, they would be covered under the umbrella of my business, but that would be a different story. And resident nurseryman. A resident nurseryman is anyone who raises any type of perennial plant in South Dakota. They are licensed. They have to be inspected. There are 100, last numbers I got, there was 126 of those. So we may be talking about maximum 150, 175 businesses total in South Dakota. So, with that, I guess I'll stand down and ask, and you can go to any other testifiers, and I'll be here to answer any questions and et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any more proponents? For SB 160, proponents? Proponents for SB 160? Seeing none, we will move over to opponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Doug Schinkel, Department of Revenue, and I'm here in opposition of Senate Bill 160. In order for you to understand why I'm opposed to this, let me explain a couple of points about our sales tax structure. First off, we have a very broad-based sales tax. Most products and services are subject to our sales tax. Since 1969, the sales tax rate has been the same 4%. How can we keep that same low sales tax rate for 45 years? Because we do tax a wide variety of products and services, so everybody pays the sales tax. Every time we add an exemption, it shrinks that base and makes it all the more difficult to keep that 4% sales tax rate in play. Second, in South Dakota, sales tax applies to the sale of a product to the final consumer of that product. This includes products and services such as electricity, fuel, cleaning supplies, and many other items that are consumed by a retail business. Since the retail business is the final consumer of the products, the retailer must pay sales tax when they purchase them. Let's look at a local hardware store. Okay? The store buys a hammer that it's going to resell to its customer. When it buys that hammer, it doesn't pay sales tax on it. When it sells that hammer to the customer, it collects the sales tax and pays it at that time because the customer is the final consumer. Okay, let's look at that hardware store in conjunction with Senate Bill 160. The hardware store has to purchase heat to heat the store, purchase electricity to keep the lights on, those same cleaning supplies we talked about earlier, along with numerous other products and services that they use to run the store. The hardware store pays sales tax on those purchases and services because that store is the final consumer of those products. Now, looking at Senate Bill 160, what this does is it provides a new exemption from the sales tax for a retail greenhouse. What would be covered in this exemption? Well, let's say the greenhouse is growing tulips. When a retail greenhouse purchases the pesticides and uses those pesticides to grow the tulips, that purchase would now become exempt from our sales tax. When that retail greenhouse purchases the fertilizer and uses the fertilizer to grow those same tulips, that purchase would become exempt. If a retail greenhouse purchases fuel to heat the greenhouse, that would be exempt from sales tax under this bill. Okay. These are all products that greenhouse becomes a final consumer of when it's growing these tulips. Again, this bill is going to exempt from sales tax a retail greenhouse purchase of pesticides, fertilizer, and fuel, and they're the final consumer of those products. With that in mind, this is why I oppose this bill. Okay. First, Senate Bill 160 is going to weaken our broad-based sales tax. It's an exemption from sales tax that would be granted only to retail greenhouses and would be a loss of revenue of $150,000 to approximately $350,000. Okay. One business alone reported over $300,000 just in fuel, and another business reported use tax on over $750,000 in items in 1 year. That's one business.
Mr. Chairman?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I think if comments like that are made in support or in opposition of 160, I think we should have some documentation to substantiate those claims.
Mr. Schinkel, do you have documentation?
I can provide. I don't have it with me.
Okay, could just follow up, Mr. Chairman. There was a comment made that, and I forgot the exact figure that you were saying within the department's budget, that the citizens would lose $150 to to $300,000?
Yes.
Just with that statement, the validity that came out of your mouth, I think it's totally inappropriate unless you have some proof to substantiate that. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that comment is totally out of order, and I would discourage this committee listening to that.
We'll go ahead and finish your comments.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. Okay. This bill provides sales tax exemptions. Cities and states would lose some money on this. Okay. This bill also grants an exemption that is not afforded to other retail businesses. Second, Senate Bill 160 violates the final consumer rule. I mentioned earlier that sales tax applies to the sale of products to the final consumer of those products. Pesticides, fertilizer, and fuel are products in which sales tax would be due for retail greenhouses that uses those products. This bill would change the rule that businesses must pay sales tax on their consumables, products that are used by a retail business. Remember, Senate Bill 160 grants a sales tax break on consumables only to the retail greenhouses. It does not grant the exemption to the hardware store. And why should the hardware store be treated any different than that greenhouse? They should be treated the same. Both the retail greenhouse and the hardware store should pay sales tax on products that they consume. The proponent mentioned a fairness issue. I agree. In fairness, the key is that a retail greenhouse is not farming for tax purposes, and anything that that retail greenhouse buys that's not sold to the customer should have sales tax paid on it, the exact same as a hardware store. Buying something that's not sold to its final customer should have sales tax paid on it. Please vote no on Senate Bill 160.
Thank you, Mr. Shankle. Any more opponents to SB 160? Opponents? We will come back to final rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few things. I'm not asking for anything special here. I don't believe there's a comparison between me and the hardware store. I'm not asking for electricity to heat my store or my business or my sales room. I'm not asking for exemption on cleaning supplies. The bill is very specific, and if we compare, there is a difference. If you want to say a commercial retail business versus a farmer, but we look at the example of a farm winery where they raise grapes. They make wine. They sell it there. That is tax exempt because of the farm winery bill. The rest of the greenhouses and nurseries were not included in that. So the fertilizer and pesticides they buy is exempt. Any pesticide or fertilizer that a farmer buys is exempt. You could argue, and there are laws that talk about compounding and manufacturing, a component that goes into a final product becomes part of that final product. That fertilizer becomes part of those plants. Some of the pesticides become part of that plant. Of course, some are gone. I mean, dissolve, evaporate, etc. But without them, we would not have a final product to sell. If I was not able to, or if I chose not to spray for any diseases or insects in my greenhouse, I probably wouldn't have a very good product. I might not have any product. The idea that we're not ag, the handout specifies that we are ag. And my business, fortunately, is taxed as an agricultural enterprise. It already is ag. Everyone else recognizes it as ag. This is really the only gray area where I think there's two different standards. In defense of the gentleman from the Department of Revenue, he mentioned a particular business perhaps had over $300,000 in use tax items. You know, and of course, confidentiality, I don't expect him to say who that was, but use tax covers a lot of things. Anything I take off the shelf to use in my own garden, I pay use tax on. The seeds I plant in my own garden that I would have had to buy at retail, I pay use tax on. When I take a Christmas tree home, I pay use tax on it. When I donate something to a fundraiser, I pay use tax on it. So there are tons of things that could be included in that use tax number that looked very large that would not be covered in this particular bill. I do have the email from the gentleman from Plant Beauty, if anyone would like to look at it, with his actual numbers, $300,000, $100,000, $400,000 total expenses ahead of $16,000. And based on my experience and knowing the people around the state of South Dakota, I am confident, and I'm not going to ask for a fiscal note because 2 years ago, the Department of Revenue made the fiscal note and the LLC had to write off on it because they didn't have any evidence. They weren't privy to the numbers that the Department of Revenue has to refute it. So we'll have to go off, you know, it's kind of a trust me bill. And when you look at the possible economic impact, Plant Beauty in Sioux Falls, if they don't have to pay that $16,000 next year, I just about guarantee you they'll hire another employee. Or they'll be able to make a few improvements on their greenhouse. Little things like this can make a big difference, especially to a smaller business. So I ask you to ask you for your favorable consideration. This is a tax break for the little guys. You may wonder, well, why aren't they here? Well, some of them have been here in the past and they hate government. They hate politics. They're frustrated. They don't want to have to come back again. They leave it up to me. I think the people in this industry are kind of like the West River ranchers. They're independent. They don't not necessarily looking for a handout. But just like after Atlas hit, they kind of deserve one. You will not see any greenhouses, nurseries on the contributions list of the governor's campaign. You will not see there any names on the list of the U.S. senatorial campaign. This is kind of a David versus Goliath bill, I think. And so thank you much.
Thank you, Senator. We will close testimony and open to committee questions. Senator Dwelke.
Yeah, this is for Doug. I guess a big part of the discussion in my mind is this ag, and why would the greenhouses be, you know, treated differently than farmers if they're both classified as ag? So if you can explain that to me. Thank you.
Go ahead.
The fact of the matter is,
The fact of the matter is these are retail greenhouses. For sales tax purposes, they're a retail greenhouse. Whether they consider themselves ag or not, it's a retail business.
Go ahead.
Okay, so whether they, you know, think of themselves as ag, it doesn't matter. I can think of myself as being skinny, and I'm not skinny. But are they classified as ag, or are they not classified as ag? I guess that's my question.
Mr. Chair, for sales tax purposes, these are not considered ag. They're considered retail.
Go ahead.
I guess why.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
For to be considered an ag business, think of a farmer. What do you think of when you're thinking of a farmer? Thinking of the guy out milking the cows. You're thinking of the guy who's out there on the tractor planting the crops, growing the crops. That's a farmer. Mm-hmm. That's ag. This is a retail business. Selling a tulip to me to make my house look pretty.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Crickaby.
I think I guess as long as we have the Department of Revenue there, let's talk tomatoes. I mean, this is certainly in this bill, defining the vegetable, and I'm not going to go off on this tulip scenario, but a retailer or a restaurant, let's focus on a restaurant right now. They purchased their vegetables, a case of tomatoes, to put in their restaurant to resell as far as their menu. That's tax exempt because they're in fact going to resell that product. So what would be the difference, just in your personal opinion, as far as when we're talking about growing food, on still assessing that tax on a greenhouse producer, somebody that wants to enhance food consumption, whether it be a seedling or anything else, when that end user is actually going to pay that tax again? And so I guess I'm not comparing apples to oranges, I'm comparing tomatoes to tomatoes. What is the specific difference, I guess, with those two scenarios?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Sure. The retail greenhouse can, if they're selling this tomato seedling to Senator Kirkby, for example, and you're going to raise your tomatoes off of there, and you're going to sell your tomatoes to the restaurant, certainly you can purchase your tomato plants exempt from tax because you're going to resell those. We're in this situation, we're not talking about things that the greenhouse is reselling. What we're talking about are the inputs that they have, the pesticides, the fertilizers, the fuel, those types of things. The same as you growing that tomato plant would need to pay sales tax on and to grow that product, to grow that tomato so that you can sell it to the restaurant. You would still be responsible to pay the sales tax on the items that you put into that product so that you can sell it.
Okay. Good follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kirkaby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's continue focusing on this tomato, that historical tomato farmer that produces food for consumption for the citizens of South Dakota. If you are a bona fide tomato farmer, his pesticides, his fertilizers, all of those items that he requires to build and maintain and eventually have a harvest on those tomatoes are exempt. So I guess with that, what would be the difference in my specific question on supporting and enhancing the big guy as opposed to the small retailer within that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is my question.
Go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Let's look at a situation similar to this. That same tomato farmer that's going to be, want to consider him a tomato farmer, and he's on his land, goes to Walmart to purchase his seedling rather than to a retail greenhouse. Walmart still has all of these inputs that they have. They have all of the items that they purchased to use to begin the growth of that seedling or whatever it may be. Okay. Could the tomato farmer be exempt from these? Absolutely. The tomato farmer could be, depending on if he's considered an ag or not. The fact of the matter is that a retail establishment is not exempt from these inputs, and the retail greenhouse is one of those that should not be exempted. The same as a Walmart shouldn't be exempted from that. The same as the the local grocery store shouldn't be exempted from their inputs.
Senator Jones.
I think I'm following this, but so the farmer is not considered a retailer, and the nursery or the greenhouse is considered retail, which makes sense. I mean, is that essentially what you're saying?
Yes, that is true for sales tax purposes.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, I'm relatively new. So, what other examples can you give me where maybe other industries have come forward trying to carve out exemptions? Is it common? I understand it. Needs to go through the process and whatnot. But can you just give me some others in recent history, or is it picking up? Or any thoughts on that?
Go ahead.
Obviously, there's we see exemption bills every session. Various industries are coming looking for a tax break for their particular industry. To give you some examples, this year we're looking at one that would possibly exempt some computer type services. Manufacturers are coming looking for different types of exemptions from time to time. There's just all sorts of various industries who will come looking for an exemption. Each time that they come and each time that one is granted, it just weakens our tax base. And we just need to resist that urge to allow these.
Follow up?
Yeah, I can appreciate that. But do you look at them case by case basis, or I mean, is it pretty much standard? I mean, I can see where it could start eroding, and more folks could come forward with exemptions. But is there certain ones that you've looked at where okay, the exemption's okay, and I'm not a loaded question guy, and I know that's kind of loaded, but I'm just curious because I mean to me the standard is always the same, but sometimes the situation and circumstances can be such where maybe an exemption would be appropriate. I don't know what that would be, but
go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Obviously, we look at each exemption bill on its own merits. As a general rule, the department and I consider exemption bills to be bad tax law and bad law, and we would want those to be killed, quite honestly. The department does look at each individual exemption bill and then decides how to proceed on the merits of that bill. Can I give you any examples where the department did not oppose an exemption bill? Not right off the top of my head, but we certainly look at them at each one that's brought forth.
Any other questions? Senator Dwelke.
Well, I just remember last year when you guys talked about, a few years ago there was a study on all these exemptions, right? Looking at exemptions and trying to see which ones were legit and whether some of those should be eliminated, and basically found that I don't think we eliminated any exemptions, did we?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Correct. A couple of years ago, there was a study done on the exemptions. It was determined at the time that there were over $500 million worth of exemptions in the state. Did look at trying to remove some of those exemptions at that time, and none were removed. And I guess what that proves to me is that once you do put an exemption in place, it's there for the duration and almost impossible to remove. Therefore, we do hold our tax structure pretty near and dear, and we do oppose exemptions.
Any other questions, Senator Jones?
Question for Senator Bogalka.
Yes.
Senator, go ahead.
Senator Bogalka, so I was just listening to your arguments, and I know you refer to the word fairness a lot, and I wasn't sure if you necessarily hit enough on, is it really necessary for greenhouses to still be, you know, economically viable, you know, for the future, so on and so forth. Any thoughts on that?
Well, any business, no matter how you tax them, they're going to have to pass the raise their prices and pass it on to the customer. You know, you could ask that question about anything from any business. To expound on that a little bit and to follow your further question, if I may.
You can.
I sell all my products at retail. Everything I sell gets charged sales tax. I'm not in the business of selling fertilizer in a 50-pound bag or a gallon jug of insecticide. I'm a retail business. I charge sales tax on my final product. Other than a few isolated instances, I may sell some shrubs to a landscaper who has a sales tax license who charges his customer the sales tax. The tomato farmer who's raising tomatoes, as far as I know, and I don't know of any, evidence contrary, anybody who raises fruits and vegetables in South Dakota is paying the use tax on their pesticides and their fertilizer. They are not considered agriculture. They are paying sales and use tax on those tomatoes. And when you use the analogy of a restaurant, to say that I don't deserve a tax break on the items that go into my final plants would be like saying the restaurant should pay sales tax on their salt because their salt is an ingredient in their food. They do not sell salt. Salt is not on the menu. Salt is an ingredient that is tax exempt in a restaurant. That is a fair analogy. The same way with a tomato. You do not walk in the restaurant. There is not a plate of whole tomatoes on the menu. They buy those tomatoes wholesale. They do not pay sales tax on those tomatoes when they buy them, but they become part of the final product. They wash them, they cut them up, they put them in your salad. You pay sales tax on that salad when you buy it. Just like I put ingredients into my plants, which are taxed ultimately when you buy them. I'm not asking, when we say they looked at all these exemptions, they didn't look at this one. This is not an exemption. This is a tax that I believe needs to be exempted. And the fact that they looked at all those exemptions, and they're very well scrutinized, the fact that those exemptions did get through the legislature originally, and the fact that none of them got booted out, to me, says the legislature has done a good job the last 30 years giving exemptions because nobody is willing to turn the clock back and eliminate those exemptions. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Good Senator from Clear Lake. In your tomato business, would you say that most of your tomatoes that you sell, that you purchase from somewhere else to sell, or do you raise all your own tomatoes?
All the tomatoes that I sell, I raise. I purchase seeds and the media to grow them in. And those are tax free. Or if I buy small plants, and if I buy a plug tray of little tomatoes from a large wholesale greenhouse in the Twin Cities, I do not pay tax on that because that is an ingredient in my final product. But I do grow all the tomatoes that I sell, whether I sell them as a plant or whether I plant them into my garden and sell the fruit later on in the year. I do raise them all myself, yes.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have just a quick question for the prime sponsor. Question what was brought up a couple minutes ago about you briefly touched on about some exemptions, but do you have, early in your testimony, you offered some exemptions on similar related food producing agricultural type products. Could you refresh my memory on other exemptions that you are aware of? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. The ag exemptions that I am aware of would be any kind of poultry or fowl, any kind of raising of fish, bees, the grapes, or whatever fruit is raised at a farm winery. It could be raspberries, apples, pears, whatever. Forestry and timber is exempt. So, to my knowledge, those are all exempt. You know, if I raise trees for timber and I have to buy pesticides, that would be exempt. But if I'm raising a tree to sell to plant in your yard for shade, that is not exempt.
Thank you. Any other questions? We will then close the questions and we will move to committee discussion. Senator Welke.
Well, I'm confused. I mean, I know that, you know, we're a low tax state and we're not going to raise any taxes. That's an absolute, right? And of course, we have rising demands for the revenue that we do get. So when I look at a tax or a tax policy, you obviously look at, you know, obviously you're trying to raise revenue and be fair. And with that ovation, I guess the other one I look at was influencing behavior. I don't see anything on that one, but I guess I'm not sure. I can understand why the revenue department is very strongly trying to say this, because we need the revenue. And do we have a compelling argument that this is unfair? I guess that's what we're looking at. What I guess I'd like to hear some of your
Anybody? Senator Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in a similar situation with the good senator here on my right. Just a thought, and, you know, I try to look out and be somewhat visionary or see the future, and I just, you know, when you look at the fiscal health of the nation, and I know South Dakota's in a good position, I'm concerned with maybe exemptions that have already been granted, and to me, I just think we're going to see more and more. But I do understand the good senator from Clear Lake's intent. It seems like it's a small industry and probably wouldn't have a huge impact on the state's budget. But once again, you know, I just think we're going to see more increases of folks wanting exemptions. And the only part I'm stuck on is with the, you know, the horticulture of why it wasn't considered, but I do understand the retail aspect from it there. So I just wanted to be able to say that.
Thank you, Senator. Any other discussion?
Just briefly, and I just want to make a quick response to the previous committee man. We will have the opportunity and the luxury over the next multiple years to review every single related issue like that. And it's a compliment to our process. It's the beauty of being a citizen legislature that we have that rare opportunity and luxury to look at these. It's unfortunate each and every year. There's no question about that. We'll have different opportunities or requests to come in. But with the discussion part of our position on Senate Bill 160. Mr. Chairman, are you planning on taking final action on this, or I guess more specifically with just four members on our committee? I think in all fairness to both the pros and the cons on this, that perhaps maybe we could re-calendar this or put it at the bottom of the line in some previous upcoming meeting where we can actually have, not open up the debate again by any means, but maybe a quick little recap. And we're missing three committee members, Mr. Chairman. But that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Is there a motion?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I would move to defer action on Senate Bill 160.
Senator Kirkerby has moved to defer action on 160. Is there... We have a second through Senator Welke. Discussion on the motion. No discussion. Secretary, would you call the roll on?
Senators Ewing. Oh, Senator Jones.
Aye.
Kirkeby.
Aye.
Amdahl. Welke.
Aye.
Monroe. Cotton.
Aye. We will defer this then at the bottom of for Monday. And we will revisit the issue. We have done that. We do not need any further action. And we are down to, do we have a motion to adjourn? Senator Jones, and seconded by Senator Welke. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We do stand adjourned.